יהיו לרצוני וריתי והגיון לבי לפניך אדוני, צורי וגואלי. May the words of my mouth and thoughts of my heart be acceptable before you, my Lord, my God, my Rock and my Redeemer. Shalom, welcome, greetings everybody, to our second class in our series and the ways and laws of the occult. Of course, our source material, which we are using as our foundation here, is the Code of Jewish Law, the Shulchan Aruch, the section called Yoradeah, and section 179. And for the record, we are holding in, we're going to be learning from paragraph, section 3 on tonight, so we'll see. But anyway, I want to again, with this introduction here, put things in a context. Number one, before we even get started, for those of you who join me live, you know I appreciate you being here. And to express my appreciation to you, and to assist you in the learning of the materials that we have in these classes, I offer special discounts on my course materials, which are available only to those who are listening here live. Tonight, for the record, is the 9th of July, 2012. Those of you who are listening to this recording, well, I would wish to encourage you to join us live so you too can take advantage of these opportunities. Now, these are time-limited opportunities only for you guys here. You have made the effort to join me and to be here with me. Well, I reciprocate. Now, this is what I have for you tonight. Anyway, as you're going to see, tonight we're going to discuss the difference between superstition and real clairvoyance, and expanding the powers of the mind actually, and if you will, definitively means learning extrasensory perceptions. These things are not rational and logical and analytical. They just are what they are. And we have people right here who I know or are with us now who understand very well what I am talking about, who have sensing abilities. And these things are not superstitious, but actual and real. And the ways and means of that, where we will discuss tonight. Now, couple of things. I have my Jewish Magic Series, which is seminars, or I should say classes, not seminars. They are the first and second semesters, preparation for the third semester. I have been offering them at a special discounted rate, and I will continue to do so tonight. They were originally, over $700 for the next 12 hours for those of you listening live until Tuesday morning, January 10th, 9 o'clock when the offer expires, $200 for both courses. I've offered that before, I'll offer it again. The way you get it is you go online to koshertorah.com. You make a $200 donation, probably bestly through my PayPal page, and then just put in a little note saying which courses you want. That's offer number one. Now, here's a special offer. It does require that you know a little bit of Hebrew, because I don't always translate. A course that's not available on koshertorah.com that I did a while back, and only a few of you ever attended. It is a course in an ancient Kabbalistic tradition known as the Secrets of the Four Rivers, from the material of an ancient rabbi who was actually one of the teachers of the author of this Code of Jewish Law, Yosef Karo, himself, Rabbi Yosef Tatzayach. The Secret of the Four Rivers comes from a book called Shoreshei Shemot, The Source of the Holy Names, wherein which I teach the secrets of the permutations of the letters of the names of the four rivers and their meanings and usages. This is a video course. There are three lessons of it. I originally charged over $100 tonight for those of you who want the three video lessons, plus all the Hebrew materials involved, plus the permutation chart or shviti or artwork, whatever, $50 only. I don't even have this course available on Kosher Torah for purchase, so if you want it, this is a special opportunity, but I remind you, Hebrew or knowledge of Hebrew is required, so I don't translate every which word. I listened to today again to make sure. And I'm crazy, and I confess. Knowledge of expanding consciousness, in my opinion today, is a life and death decision. With all the strange and bizarre things that are going on in the world right now, our bizarre and unusual weather patterns, the likes of which have people scratching their heads from around the world, because things are just happening, which is just unusual. The only way that we ever, if you will, using my own terms here, get our fingers on the pulse of life, nature, is to expand consciousness, to tap into the collective of things, which we're going to talk about tonight. Best way that I can provide that for you is my Sefer Yetzirah course, $1,000 course. Tonight, the next 12 hours, for those of you who have not already purchased it or acquired it or have otherwise learned it, $250. And I'll even break it down into two payments of $125 each. If you're interested, you send me an email or go to my donations page and just send me an email. 1, 2, 3, special offers. Take advantage of these. Use them wisely. Also, I've given you in the past, I'll give it to you again. Basic Meditation, my Shem seminar, Usages of the Holy Name Yudke Vavke. $50. I throw in the Dream Interpretation Seminar for free. You get both of them for the same $50. So if you make a donation for $50, make sure you tell me which courses you're offering. Don't confuse me. Remember, I'm getting old and senile here. So you got to help me out. But anyway, during this course, you got 12 hours. You send me the email, you make the donation, you get it right in your emails. For those of you live, my appreciation, token of thanks to you. I, as your friend, your brother, please don't look at me as being a rabbi, a leader, or anything of the kind. I'm nothing of the kind. Just a regular, simple little guy who came from Long Island. See, I could still remember my old accent from when I was a boy. My emphasis is that regardless of who we are, regardless of what we are, we are all sharing of a same commonality. We are human beings. There is no distinction between Jewish and non-Jewish, male or female. There are no distinctions in the place of our color or anything of the kind, because ultimately, fundamentally down the common denominator, we are all created in the image of God. Our purpose to come in the physical bodies that we do is simply to go to school. We are here to learn. Our higher selves, we are already learned. Being in this body, in this world, in these lives, think of it, if you will, as if summer school. You know how we would go to school and we'd want to get a jump start on the next semester, or maybe have to retake a course over the summer because we didn't do too well on it, want to get up to snuff? That's why we come to this world. Only a small fraction of our true, complete selves are we aware of in that which we call the conscious mind. And ultimately, you must understand this. The point that is so eloquently made by Dr. Robert Lanza in his book, Biocentrism. I encourage you, that's a great book to read. This is a world-leading medical doctor who leads stem cell research. Brilliant man. Nice little book. And his basic premise is real simple. One, that I don't even know if he would be aware, is the foundation of our Torah and our prophetic tradition. And that is, everything is alive. He states like this: in the 20th century, everybody was looking for the answers of the universe through the science of physics. He says we should change that and look for the answers to the universe in the science of biology. He states that everything in the universe seems to be conducive to the creation of life. So therefore, maybe life is what motivates evolution and development. And he postulates that the whole universe, therefore, is somehow alive. You find that echoed in the words of the supposed rationalist Maimonides in his foundations of Jewish law, the Yesodei Torah, where it says that every planet is alive, conscious, and sentient, knows itself and knows God. We're going to go one step further. So is everything else. In the writings of the philosophical Kabbalists, like the Arizal, he states that everything has what he calls sparks of holiness. Sparks of holiness trapped within. We call sentient consciousness. Rocks have a consciousness. Trees have a consciousness. Water, air, fire have consciousness. We can communicate with them. All the more so, the animal kingdom. Very famous legends passed down throughout the ages that Solomon, King Solomon, spoke with the animals. We all know that Adam did in the Garden of Eden. That wisdom has never been lost. Now, don't go asking me what language the animals speak. No, they don't speak Hebrew. Communication is telepathic. It's mind-to-mind communication. The only reason why we can't and we don't do this is because of the blockages in our minds. In the words, or the terms, I should say, of Carl Jung in psychology, he calls it the shadow of consciousness. In the language of the theoretical Kabbalah, they call it the klipot, the husks or the shells, which block the mind. This is what we must understand. You see, the section of Jewish law that we're going to deal with right now, which is so important, is often terribly misunderstood. And I have to explain to you a wee bit of history here of how codes of law come about. And then you'll understand why they're written in the way that they are, in the language that they are, and what they're trying to say. And by looking only at the surface and missing what it's all about, you miss the greater picture. Now, let me explain. In ancient times, when codes were written, no one ever sat down with the idea to think, let's write a comprehensive code, rationally and logically, explaining things A, B, C, D. No. The codes developed, they evolved, in a relationship to things as they developed, as circumstances were. So when we read things in the Mishnah, or we read things in the Talmud, the Gemara, we don't see necessarily a logical progression of the expression of the examples given. But rather, these were examples of the cultural norms and the psychological, I might add, subjective realities of the time, to which the authors of the Mishnah or the authors of the Gemara would therefore comment on in the same way that we would to comment today on what our circumstances are. Well, needless to say, the rabbis of one generation commented on the comments before them. And rabbis of the later generation made their comments on what was written before them, and on and on and on. And one code or one commentary built upon the other, upon the other, upon the other, upon the other, until we have the code that we have today, the Code of Jewish Law, Rabbi Yosef Karo, written in the 1570s, ballpark. That's why you're not going to find a comprehensive A to Z reference of things, but actually just picking and choosing different ideas, which, when you know the way of how codes evolved in the psychology of the people, then you will understand it. So if you remember from our last class, it opened up with the topic of we don't ask from seers and stars and the like. Well, why begin there? Well, because previous codes began there. Why did they begin there? Because of previous, and on and on and on it goes. The choice of language we see is unique again from the history. And the point that we must always emphasize, just because something is written, as we read from all the commentaries, there are variant opinions to things. And that is what's very important. You see, one of the great things that must be understood, way back in the Bible, book of Leviticus, certain laws were given to place parameters and boundaries around our interaction with the supernatural, what we call the supernatural. There is really no such thing as supernatural, because everything ultimately is natural, because it's created by the Lord of nature, God himself. But there are things which are from parallel dimensions with what for us in this physical domain are invisible worlds. They are not invisible to the mind or consciousness, but they are invisible to the flesh. They very much interact with us and have very intimate influences over us. And yet, we must also, to augment this, know we are not the only intelligent indigenous species to our planet. We are not the top of the food chain in spite of what we might think. There are other indigenous entities, races, that inhabit our planet. Inner Earth, our Earth, parallel dimension Earth, those which have been here long before us and have since evolved and gone to the stars, just like we are destined to do in the future. Now, all of these others are all around us, and our higher selves interact with them on a regular basis. However, the nature of our organic brain focuses us on the rational external world at the expense of the inner doorway to outer or greater reality. In every ancient culture, there were always those who had, if you will, the access to the higher domains, who lived by different forms and structures of consciousness. And this is very important to understand. You see, we live in one form of a mindset. We think what's is called linearly, where in which we believe there is a cause and then there is an effect, and then there is a cause and then there is an effect. We go from A to B to C to D in a straight line. Reality doesn't follow any straight lines. There are no straight lines in nature. Everything is cyclical. Everything is circular. Everything revolves around a center. So therefore, rather than look to point A and B and C and D in a straight line, rather recognize that there is a center, and that A and B and C and D are like orbit and circle around that center. So even though we look for the cause and effect relationship of A and B, we're forgetting to recognize that A and B are both as if spokes in the of a wheel that connect to the center of the wheel. And it's the center of the wheel that create A, create B, and the relationship between A and B. So therefore, look to A and B to try to understand it. We're missing the point, because that point is the center. Those looking for the unified field, the understanding of everything, are missing the center. And therefore, until they find or discover that center, they will always be out there in the dark. Now, understand, the center is what we call consciousness. Lanza calls it life. This is it. And this is sentience. This is consciousness. This is why we have to go beyond the limitations. But the problem with going on beyond the limitations is the rational mind's misinterpretation of what's beyond. That's why you must practice meditation, not as a form where you meditate 5, 10, 20 minutes a day, but a comprehensive transformation of the way you think, the way you look at life, always. From looking at it in the form of a line, to looking at it in the form of a circle, to see a greater reality, and recognize that when we have unusual weather patterns, like I write in my koshertorah.com emails, you can sense there is a great disturbance. You feel it. And people have said to me rationally, well, you know, there are fluctuations in weather patterns. I said, yeah, but not like this. They said, well, who knows, blah, and I hear all these talk. Sometimes, to use the words of the Sefi Yetzirah again, special offer tonight, silence your mouth from speaking. Clear your mind of questions. But what is the greatest problem in all of this, believe it or not, is human superstitions. That people believe things to be true which have no foundation in truth. Now, understand the nature of the cyclical reality. You might have heard the term called quantum physics. Quantum physics says that ultimately, reality as we know it isn't this rigid, structured form that we understand, but rather, in reality, it's rather fluid. They learn this from watching and observing particles. They recognize that particles, when they are observed, act in a certain way. When they're unobserved, act in a different way. Everything in reality is in a constant state of flux. And it's only human consciousness that makes things rigid, rigidizes. This is what we call in Hebrew, gevura, or din. And forms it in the way that it does. So therefore, any time you and I have a mental construct, this is what must be. This is what I fear will be. This is what I want to be. Whenever we are trying to focus things, the more energy we put into that focus, the greater we create that reality, for good or for bad. This is what we are warned not to do. Why? Needless to say, because you are shackling. You are handcuffing, if you will, the hand of God. We are taught, and this is the foundations of our faith, which makes us distinctly different from that taught elsewhere in many places. We have the concept, we call it in Hebrew, teshuvah, means a return to God. That don't call it repentance. Everybody understands what repentance is. But there is this concept called karma. What you give is what you get. What goes around comes around. How then can you neutralize that? Or if it should be neutralized, then yes, it can. Well, let me tell you this. If you are existing in this dimensional plane, and you project that energy, good or bad, one way or another, it's going to circle around and come back and whack you in the head. Like it says in Psalm 23, yea, goodness and mercy shall pursue me, pursue you, run after you, all the days of my life. Well, goodness and mercy will pursue you if you are blessed, and badness and judgment will pursue you if you're evil. It's just the way it works. So, I return to God. Means I get off of the cyclical cycle of the ABCD, which is going around the circle, and I go back to the center. I therefore have neutralized that flow which is coming after me by going back to the center. And the center can wing me out into a different orbit. This is why we say that when we wake up every morning, we are like a new creation. This is the secret of the meaning that we recite in our prayers, HaMechadesh Betuvo B'chol Yom Ma'aseh Bereshit, that God renews every day the act of creation. Literally, when you change, you are creating a parallel alternate universe, energetically, wherein which forces of the past are neutralized and do not follow you into the future. But your change has to be a psychic one. A true, sincere one. Not just, you know, I'm giving up smoking kind of thing and therefore think your lungs clear up. No. Energy of it makes all the difference. That is how you have to understand things. Now, when this gets blurred, we have superstition. I think superstition is one of the most greatest evils that man has created. With no further ado, let me introduce you the examples of superstition that have come down to us in our Jewish tradition. So I read to you now from section 3. Ha'omer piti naflam epi. The one who says, bread has fallen from my mouth. or Mekili Miyadi, or my staff from my hand, or Beni Koreli Me'achorai, my child is calling me from, you know, behind me. Oh, Shetzvi Hefsiku Baderech, or he sees like a deer cross his path. Oh, She'avar Nachash Mi'amino, or he sees a snake pass him on his right, or a fox pass him on his left. Or, Lemi She'ira Lo Achad Me'elu, anything of this nature, and you interpret it to be a sign of this or that, whether not to go on your way or not to start anything, and all of these things, it says here, people who do similar type signs with foxes or with birds or with the stars, and also one who would say, I don't want to start something because, you know, I want to wait until the morning. I want to wait until after the for the new week or for the new month. And here's another little interesting thing. The one who would, you know, slaughter a chicken because the chicken sounds like a rooster, or slaughter the hen because it sounds, wait a second, yeah. You slaughter the hen because it sounds like the rooster, or you slaughter the rooster because it sounds like a hen. That's all forbidden. We don't do any of this. Now, what's this all about? Well, these are the examples of what were common in Talmudic times, and therefore the commentaries use these examples to state what? People were always superstitious. There was always these ominous signs. People do the same thing today and don't realize what they are creating by limiting the quantum realities by accepting certain things as having specific meanings. And I say to people, forget all of that. You don't have to limit things. You can be more fluid. These superstitions, these limitations of the mind, were clearly prohibited from Mount Sinai because Sinai Torah was given to us to teach us to expand consciousness, to reconnect to the higher integrated parallel dimensions. Period. Anytime we limit that in ourselves, we limit. And that's bad, that's wrong. That's why he says here, that's forbidden. This is not clairvoyance. This is not extrasensory perception. If and when I drop something and I say, well, maybe that's a sign of this or that. Maybe it is. Maybe it's not. And I'll give you an example. In the Gemara, Tractate Pesachim, there is an example of the great sage Hillel, who was asked a question of Jewish law about specifically how do you bring a knife to the Holy Temple, how do you carry it when you're not allowed to carry. And he said, you know, I forgot. But he says, you know, I'm not worried about it because somehow, some way, God will remind me. Now, rather than look at some superstitious omen, the next day he saw somebody was bringing a sheep to the temple for the sacrifice. He saw that it had the knife stuck in the wool there, and he says, oh, that's it. It made him remember that that's the way it was supposed to do. And he says, leave it up to Israel, trust in God, because even though we're not prophets, we're their children. Meaning, somehow, somewhere, we do have the clairvoyant, extrasensory perception ability of knowing, remembering, seeing beyond, not through the limitations of superstition, but by being open. So Hillel didn't say, well, I'm going to interpret this way, I'm going to interpret that. No, it reminded him of something. It wasn't a sign or an omen. It was what it was. And for those who have the openness of consciousness, you can recognize. I don't consider our strange and bizarre weather patterns to be a bad omen or a good omen, meaning that maybe you should plant or you shouldn't plant. Maybe you should go to school or not go to school. Maybe you should leave on a trip or not leave to a trip. I don't know. And neither do you. But if tomorrow morning I'm supposed to go somewhere and I wake up and I just you know, nothing out there is telling me go or not go. I just don't feel today is the day. I'll listen to that. I'll trust my own intuition, my own inner voice. And over the years, many times I've been dead wrong. But then, as I have questioned myself, interrogated myself, why do I say this? Why do I feel this way? Well, if I don't want to go out tomorrow morning and I look out, why? Because it's 20 below zero and there's 6 feet of snow. Well, that might be a pretty good reason. But let's just say it's not. There are times that I can just feel something, not based on any external sign. I know to heal, to hear within. As I said, we have right here in our class a scryer. That's one of the guys who know how to find water. He's listening. He knows I'm talking about him. I asked him, how do you do it? He said, I don't know. I just take the stick, go out there, and there it goes. That's right. That's the way it's done. There is no logic to it. Well, how do you know he's right? Well, you go dig and you find water. I guess it's right. That's the way it's done. So you see, all those people who go looking for signs, this interprets to that and that interprets to that, that is a crime against your own psyche. And that's why it's forbidden here. And I know people to this day who are so superstitious with regards to chickens. Right? Now, I lived out in Los Angeles. Members of the local Persian community would tell me, if this or that happened, they'd go out and slaughter a chicken. And said, well, do you know what it says in the Shulchan Aruch? And they go, no. And I said, well, maybe you should learn. Again, the Ramah, Rabbi Moshe Isserles, comments on this slaughtering of the chicken, that if it, you know, crows wrong, that's a bad sign. Well, I don't know why. Okay? He says, there are those here who say that if you're going to slaughter the chicken, but you're not saying that you're slaughtering it because you're superstitious that it made a strange, you know, cock-a-doodle-doo, then, you know, go slaughter it and don't worry about it. But you see, he's trying to introduce a bit of rationality here. But still the fear is there. The superstition is there. People have lived in a superstitious lifestyle, mentality, psyche, for a long time. Now let's explain what superstition really is. It is a fear and a premonition of what might be real. But because it's going through that filter, which again we call the shadow or the klipa, it's blurry, it's unclear, and therefore unreliable. This is the same thing with dreams, which is why I gave the dream seminar. Dreams that have a message for you are going to be loud and clear. No, it doesn't mean that you're going to see something in your dream literally as it happens. That's not the way dreams talk. But when you wake up, you're going to wake up, A, knowing you had a really profound, deep experience in your sleep. And B, you're somehow going to feel directed, compelled, that an understanding is received or a path of action is received. I'll give an example. Last week, as you know, we began this series. And I introduced that, I believe, on a Sunday. The entire week before, when we finished the Gateway to Kabbalah series, I was questioning, what should come next? What should I do next? And I was thinking about this, I was thinking about that. And I did my prayer and meditation on it, as I do normally on Shabbat. And that Saturday night, I had a dream. Very deep, very profound dream. I don't remember what it was. I don't remember what the images was. I don't remember any messages. I don't have to. It's like a programming. But when I woke up that morning, boom, right in the forefront of my mind, it said, this is what you have to teach. And I said, okay. Did I question it? I knew. Because I trained myself to know. This is why, again, I offer you these things, because you need this training to open the mind. And if you can't do this, you're in deep doo-doo. Because as the hard times come, not everyone can be a survivalist. there's this big mentality in the survivalist movement, build your compounds and have your beads and your bullets. And I said, forget all that. None of that is going to help you. Well, at least to the end. But the power of mind over matter, the power of the psychic, the intuitive, true extra sensory perception, that is what you need. So for those of you who are in urban areas or rural areas, whatever, focus on developing yourselves, because that is all that you will have with you when the time comes. Remember this message. Code of Jewish Law continues now. In section 4 it says, Bait Tinok Veisha, Apa Pishei Nechush Yesh Siman. It means a house, child, or a wife. Even though there is no fortune-telling or premonition with them, we say that it's a good sign. In other words, it means if you get married, you buy a new house, or you have a new child, you say, oh, may this be a good sign for things to come. That's not fortune-telling. That's not predictive. That's hopeful, wishful. And again, the Rabbi Yerushalis writes here, Im lo etzlich chalzei shlosh ha-pamim, o lo, alright, says, you know, just understand the ways of things. Ken Mukhtar Lomar Latinok, again, quotes here something, a very famous method of what was called divination. We discussed this in the Gemara series about the fall of Jerusalem, where in which it states here that you would ask a child, tell me, which pasuk were you learning today? To see if that's a sign of things. He goes, that's okay to do. And also the types of signs that Eliezer did, if you remember from the biblical story, when he went and looked for Isaac's wife. He says that's also permissible and things like that. But we're still supposed to go innocently before Hashem. Now, understand and know, levels of consciousness, levels of intuitive awareness cannot be analytically, rationally described and defined. The greatest attempt that we have are what are known as the 32 paths of wisdom, which are described in the Sefer Yetzirah. No, I've never taught that or included it in the Sefer Yetzirah course because it's not an actual part of the text. And B, because you really can't describe them. And in spite of all this philosophical works that I've seen in certain Hasidic circles that try to describe levels of consciousness, I've found that one goes further off the path than the next. Because they get down into details and details and details. They're trying to put a square peg in the round hole, and you just can't do it. You have to be silent. You have to just experience. Now, many of the philosophical Kabbalists were of this school of experiencers and did know many of these things. And then, unfortunately, many of the later ones after them did not. Yeah, you can ask God for a sign if and when needed, but would you recognize it? Now, I have heard people ask for bizarre and strange things. Lord, it's your will for me to buy the new Ferrari. And remember, you only make $200-$300 a week. But Lord, if you're going to give me the money to buy that new Ferrari, well, let me see. May the sun set tonight. In a way that I will interpret it to be different from last night. What the heck does that mean? Obviously, you're BSing yourself. You're trying to BS God. That's not a real test. God doesn't give a darn about you or I having that Ferrari. I'll give you a real example. I'll give you a personal example. As you know, a year ago, God blessed my family and I to move here to the mountains here in Tennessee. We've been looking for a long time to get out of the urban area. We were looking for the right place to go. Well, I might add, Tennessee was not our choice. I should say our first choice. Our first choice was in a completely different location. And we found a place. We went and applied for the mortgage, and one problem after another, after another, after another. Now, we could have jumped through all the hoops. We could have gotten that place. We could have said, well, we're going to tough it down and make it happen. But I took a step back and I said, no, things aren't meant to be like this. I sensed it. I said, we're going to go look to plan two. I came into this area because it's old native Cherokee land, and the Cherokee land, you know, according to James Adair from 1775, is they're a lost tribe. So I knew there was something special, something ancient here. This is why I came into this area. Matter of fact, the house that we're living in here was actually helped found by, again, somebody who's in this class right now. So anyway, long story short, we came, this house that we ended up getting here was not the one that we originally chose to look at. Matter of fact, it wasn't even on the list. But somehow, somewhere, things fell into place. And it pretty much met what we were looking for. Granted, it didn't have a lot of things that we needed and wanted, but somehow we just felt that it was the right thing. So, spoke to all the appropriate parties and said, let's get the ball rolling. Good Lord, if talking about fast, things fell into place one after another, after another, after another. Our heads were spinning with how fast things went. We knew that this is what was meant to be. Every door was open. Now, here is a great rule. Don't waste your time standing in front of closed doors knocking, waiting for it to open. Rather, move on. Move on. If you're standing in front of a door and you're knocking, it isn't open, move on to the next. Eventually, you're going to find the door that's open. That's the one you're meant to walk through. And here we are. Why here? Many people ask me why we moved here. The answer is, I don't know. Because I felt, sensed, that we are meant to be here. You say, well, why? I don't know. I've only been here a year. Ask me in 10 years or 20. Maybe by then I'll know. I cannot tell you now other than to say this is what's right. And we've opened our home and our doors for those of you. Many of you have been welcomed guests here, and many of you still are. And we've tried to encourage people to come. Start a community. And people have already begun to come, and others are coming soon. You are welcome. Is it right for you? I don't know. Is it meant for you? I don't know. But you should know. No superstition. No fantasies. No make-believe. Rather, if it's right for you, you'll know. And somehow, some way, things will fall into place. That is the way you must understand things. Because we as individual human beings are part of a greater whole. And let's not get overly religious here about Jewish and Israel and this and... No, we're all part of a greater whole. And like cogs in a machine, we're meant to work together, like a ballet. Did you ever see a ballet? I hate ballet personally. Alright? I would sooner probably go to the dentist for, like, you know, or oral surgery rather than go to a ballet, or certainly not an opera. But personal preferences. My point, what I'm trying to say is, though, that doesn't mean I don't appreciate the value of the beauty of the movement. Did you ever see these ballet people go, wow, I mean, it's really, that's something worthy of applause. That's life. Life is an orchestra of music. It is a ballet of movement. Like Lanza, Dr. Lanza said in his book Biocentrism, everything in the universe seems to be inducive for the creation of life. We are part of that when we go with the flow. Which means we have the ability to talk to the animals like Dr. Doolittle, or in reality, like King Solomon. Like the RE would teach, he would be able to sense the presences in the wind, in the rocks, in the water, in the land. Those levels of consciousness are accessible to those who can expand consciousness properly. This is prophetic consciousness. This is what we call bonding with God's Holy Spirit, which, if you remember, we call in Hebrew the Shekhinah, the indwelling divine presence which imbues everything. You got a real hard time doing that in urban environments with all the noise and distractions. This is why I tell people, get out of the urban environments. They will be destroyed. Not because of any prophecy of doom and gloom, but because they are such sources of psychic contamination and destruction that ultimately the human psyche itself will rebel against urbanization and subvert it, leading to its destruction, forcing people to return to a more natural lifestyle. For those of you who might know the tarot, that's the meaning of the card called the Tower. It's all psychology. Now, I have a good question here in text which I will answer because it's appropriate. What if there are holy sparks in the urban environments that are needed to be raised by the Jews living there? Well, there are holy sparks everywhere. But it is a cockamamie lie and BS deception saying, I'm in this urban area to raise the sparks here. No, what you have in the urban area is a cesspool, is a toilet. And people stay there for all the wrong reasons. Well, I want to be in my ethnic community where I can express my religious expressions the way I'm meant to be. Fine. It didn't do the people in Jerusalem any good in the days of the Second Temple. They were in the most religious place in the world. And it still collapsed under their own pollution. And God himself washed his hands from them. No, that's not an answer. There are sparks of holiness everywhere. But you can't see them, sense them, feel them when you have so much distractions. Someone's asking me here in Texas, is there a remote corner on property one can pitch a tent for a week of solitude? We have plenty of such places. I could send you up on the mountain there, in the woods there. We wouldn't even see you. You wouldn't see us. Plenty of places. If you're really interested, you give me an email. Those of you listening to this recording too, if you're so interested, we'll see what we could set up for you if you really want to come on out here. Anyway, to move right along, introducing now section 5. It says here, Hover Hever. This means to cast a spell. What do you cast spells on? I'm going to cast a spell on you, right? Hocus pocus, abracadam, shishku, whatever, right? I'm trying to say shishku bomb, here I am, right? I cast the spell. You are under my powers. Ooh. You, I'm making a joke. Many of you might remember an old 1960s soupy sales television program for the children. I think this is the one that got him booted off the air, where he said to the children, now, boys and girls, go into your mommy and daddy's purse and find those little green pieces of paper with the pictures of presidents and send them to your Uncle Soupy, right? So, how many rabbis do you hear, instead of making it sound like that in such an innocent way, say, you must give charity to me, and then we will make all your problems go away. Ooh. And some of these phony baloney guys who talk like that, and obviously a little bit more serious way to deceive people, have tens of millions of dollars. What do you do? What do you need all that money for? What for? If it's not given to help the poor, to assist people, they're a phony baloney. I see people, these supposed Kabbalist rabbis, you have an evil presence on you. You must give a tzedakah charity, $5,000, $10,000, $50,000, and it will be removed. I had a student of mine many years ago called me up from New York in tears, saying that members of a certain Kabbalist organization, as you know, I don't mention names, who said that if she didn't make a $50,000 donation, they wouldn't promise her that she'd have a good year. And I laughed. I said, that's what you want, a promise for the good year? I said, for 10 cents on the dollar, I'll make you a promise. But then I said, how do you know a promise is going to come true? You want words? I'll give you words. In other words, like Pete the Heap Barnum said, sucker is born every minute. They don't have the power to say anything. They don't have the power to guarantee anything. Only God can do that. Shame on these manipulators who take advantage of people's superstitions. They cast spells on the mind. And we'll get more into that in a later. But however, here, in this section of the Jewish law, states something differently. It's not casting a spell on other people, which is manipulating of the mind of other individuals. That's mind control. That's Hollywood. That's Madison Avenue. We're all subject to such mind control. Next time you go shopping and you want to buy this or that brand or this or that item because you think it makes you look good, feel good, be better, etc., think about it. You're brainwashed. Alrighty. Hover hever. Casting a spell. How? Zehu, meaning שעל ידי לחש מקבץ חיות או נחשים עקרבים ויתושים פרעשויים. Right? In other words, by a whispered spell, you're able to gather together animals or snakes or scorpions or flies or bugs or anything of the kind. In other words, rather than casting a spell on humans, you're using your powers of mind to influence the animal kingdom to serve your will. That is considered bad. That's considered casting a spell. But I'm going to tell you this. Did you ever talk to an animal? And I mean real communication. I don't mean saying to your dog, you want to go out, and the dog, you know, jumps up and goes to the door. No. I mean real deep. I've seen on these television programs, what do they call it? The pet psychics. Well, I think that's all mostly a bunch of baloney. I've never seen anything that's real. But try going out into nature, sitting there in proper psychic harmony and alignment, and you'll watch that animals will react to you differently, non-aggressively, and interact with you. I had an experience once, not going to mention where in which I was up in the woods, and I had deer and elk, wild deer and elk, that I was able to walk up to and feed from my hand. Think about it. Okay? That is the way it is. Needless to say, when the dog came, they ran, but, you know, what do you expect? But you can sense and learn what our sages are saying here, that many people would use this ability and then abuse it by gathering animals for a negative cause. Now, there's a disagreement here. Well, are you allowed to gather harmful animals for the sake of getting them out of an urban area, you know, an inhabited area, you know, like the Pied Piper, like gathering together the rats and trying to get rid of them all? Well, there's a disagreement. Some say you can do that, some say you can't do that. I'm not concerned about responding whether you can, should, or shouldn't. What I want you to understand is it can be done. And why can't you do it? Don't underestimate the power of this control of nature. Adam did it. Moses did it. King Solomon did it. Many of the great sages in Talmudic times did it. And many of the great and holy sages and Kabbalists in recent days and years and such do it. I didn't say did it, I say do it. Where in which they can commune with nature. You might have heard it said that a little birdie told me. I'll share with you a story, and if you go onto my Facebook page, Harav Ariel Bar Tzedok, you'll see a little proof of this. A while back, we opened up the back door of the house, and in flew this little blue bird. Came in, sat down at a place where I keep a Torah, right by, you know, the Shviti. And the dog just watched it. I was sitting there looking at it. I thought it was a bug. No, it was a bird. What bird? Look at a bird. Bird sitting there. I'm looking at the bird. Bird's looking at me. I just said to the bird, shalom. The bird chirps back. Chirp, chirp. I put out my finger to the bird. The bird climbed onto my finger. I'm sitting there saying to the bird, looking right at it. It's looking right at me. My energy towards the bird was one of peace, one of shalom. I took the bird and I walked him right out. I put him out on my perch. I asked the bird, can I take your picture? I don't think the bird really understood me, but it said, chirp, chirp. And I sat there. I went out and got the camera. And I went and snapped some pictures of the bird. And the bird just sat there. And I said, thank you. And then the bird flew away. That's a true story that happened right here. And if you don't believe me, the picture of the little blue bird is on my Facebook page. So the next time I tell you a little birdie told me something, there's his picture. You go and see it. I don't understand what that was all about. But it was. Pictures right there to show you. I got other pictures of the little birdie. That's what I'm talking about. I didn't gather all the birds together like in an Alfred Hitchcock movie to attack you. That we don't do. Is the power there to do? Yes. But we don't do it. That's Chove Hever, casting a spell. Mind over matter. Merging, bonding. This is the secret of what we say, the whole world is full of God's glory. There is none other than God's unity. Wherein which consciousness, which is locked in that little brain of yours, gets released. So you can merge with the greater consciousness, the collective consciousness of life, the universe, everything. Somebody's asking a question, what about self-defense? You don't defend yourself. Because when you're in proper harmony with life, like a ballerina, when a ballerina is moving with the proper movement of the ballet, she does not have to move out of the way of the big ballerina guy coming in a way like she has to kick him in the, you know, so-and-so to get him in. No. Natural flow. She's out of the way. Real self-defense, as anyone who knows true martial arts knows, is psychic movement. For those of you who know what we call the soft styles, Tai Chi, Bagua, Xing Yi, you always go with the flow of movement. Unlike Jiu Jitsu or hard styles of Kung Fu, the Tai Chi uses the movement of the energy of the opponent against him and goes with the flow of nature. This is the proper way. Someone's asking, what about defending others? We don't defend others. That's God's job. If we are the conduit through which such defense occurs, then so be it. And if not, then no. Very interesting story, just as we're running out of time here, I'll share with you. I read a book, which is an autobiography of a Taoist master. During the days of the Japanese invasion of China, how when he was at that time a teenager in the Taoist monastery learning detachment and, you know, bonding with nature, kind of like what we're talking about now. How under the horror of what the Japanese did to the Chinese, kind of like what the Germans did to the Jews, he was overwhelmed by the spirit of nationalism, went and spoke to the abbot of his monastery, said, I got to leave, I got to get involved and fight for Mother China. And now the master said, you should be detached, go with the flow, and if you go with the flow, things will be as it is. He says, no, I can't do that, I got to go fight. So he went off and fought. About a year or so later, he says his partisan movement came to a town which had a Japanese regiment there. And remember, the Japanese, they're all, you know, the Japanese officers are all black belts in karate. And they said some Chinese master came and beat the snots and killed all the Japanese officers there with their karate. So they investigated to find out who did this and who was it. It turns out it was this young man's Taoist master. And he's appalled and he says, "Master, I thought you said not to get involved, not to do the, to be detached." And he goes, "I am detached, and I was detached. And every moment that I was involved with at that moment, I was detached. But the nature of my detachment put me there at that time and that place, and I acted as detachment led me to do." And that is such a profound lesson. And I'll share with you a similar lesson. There's a famous story in Talmudic legend. It speaks of these two rabbis who are, you know, on the path, walking the way. And they come to a river crossing. And there is a woman present. And the woman can't cross. So the one older rabbi says, "Hop on my shoulders, I'll take you across." And he does, puts her down, she says, "Thank you," and walks off. The younger student is appalled, shocked, that this great elderly sage would take a woman, a strange female, on his shoulders. Oh, you know what all that could lead to. Well, I personally don't, but I guess somebody does. And for hours he was stewing on it. And that night they get to the hotel, and the rabbi sees that his student is very much disturbed, and he says, my young apprentice, student, what's bothering you?" He says, "Rabbi, all those hours ago, you took this strange woman and you touched her and put her on your body and held her legs around your shoulders, and how could you do that?" And he goes, "My son, my child, my student, for the moment, it was what was necessary and what was needed. But yet, I then put her down and forgot about it. I see you haven't put it down yet, and you have been holding it all along." The point is, that is not detachment. So you see, the way is to go with the flow. That's what we call in Torah going with the Shekhinah, bonding with God, returning to God, or true Teshuvah. This is the way we do things. This is the way we flow with things. We don't use our bonding with the greater to influence it for personal gain. That is what we call the forces of witchcraft, or Wicca for that matter. That's what they do. We do not direct movement. We surrender to it and let God go with the flow. So that's why, again, in conclusion here, when we see that we have the ability and the power of mind over the influence of the animals, it is not right and proper to use it as such. Now, we're going to continue, God be willing, in our next class. And we're going to discuss matters of how to use names, how to use powers, how to direct things in proper ways. But in conclusion now, because we're kind of like over time, take advantage of the offers I gave you. The Four Rivers of Eden course, $50. The Meditating God's Name with the Dream Interpretation Seminar, $50. My two semesters in Jewish magic, $200. Sefer Yetzirah for tonight only, $250. Take advantage, practice, learn, experience, and go with the flow. And after we're done with the text of the Code of Law here itself, we will discuss other things that are not discussed here just to make sure the subject is complete. And we'll talk about things like the Yi Jing, Tarot readings, seances, and of course the Ouija board. How can we not discuss the Ouija board? But anyway, we'll get into those things in classes to come. So for tonight, thank you all for joining me. God's blessings. I'm your host, Ariel Bartzadok, and we will see you, God be willing, at koshertorah.com online. Thanks again. Good night.